This is a prayer ministry service. We pray for ourselves and for others because we recognize that we all depend on God. God is like a mother and we like breastfeeding babies. We depend on God for everything all of the time. But often we don't realize it. Often we don't realize it until we experience some significant loss. In the book of Job, we meet someone who has experienced a series of very significant losses. In chapters 1 and 2, which we looked at 2 weeks ago, we see Job losing his belongings and his livelihood, his children, all of the next generation of his family. And then in chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, where we got up to, it's page 499 in the Old Testament section of the Church Bibles. In chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, he's fallen out with his wife, the only family member left. And now, as we set off from chapter 2, verse 11, Job is feeling very alone. Now, when Job's three friends heard all of these troubles that had come upon him, each of them set out from his home. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They met together to go and console and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him, and they raised their voices and wept aloud. They tore their robes and threw dust in the air upon their heads. They sat with him on the ground for 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. Well, when we face loss, that's often when we find out who our friends are. And Job found he had three friends, not just Facebook friends. That's not what friends are, really. Proverbs 18, verse 24 says, "A man of many friends may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." So Job has three friends who do make the effort to turn up in his hour of need. Three friends from three different places. One of them, at least, from a place renowned for its wisdom, Teman, is mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 49, verse 7. And they are wise enough to get together first, plan a little strategy, and then come to visit with a good aim, working together. Verse 11, to share his grief, console, and to offer comfort, which in the Hebrew is an active thing. It's to speak to the heart, honestly, helpfully. But it's easier said than done. First, as they approached him, they didn't even recognize him. Don't know if you've known the same. I have. I've gone to visit someone in hospital, been told they're in room 4, gone in, looked around at each of the beds and thought, oh no, they're not here. Then looked again and thought, oh my goodness, that's them. It's not easy visiting a friend in need. But the three friends did their best. They dropped everything, they turned up, they got there and they sat there with him, wept aloud as they belatedly recognized the scabby man lying in the dust with torn clothes as their friend Job. And they were quite good at the consolation. They wept with the one who wept. That's what Jesus tells us to do. That's what he did. And they stayed with him for 7 days in silence. And if you've nothing to say, that's better than avoiding people. Sit with them. Once I sat with a husband who just lost his wife to Alzheimer's. He said she was a wonderful woman who used to have so many friends. I think she was captain at the golf club and involved in several other large organizations, very actively involved, all sorts of friendship circles. But so very few of them came to visit in her last months when it got so difficult. And he said, even with dementia, she would have loved a visit. But friends didn't come. He said, maybe they didn't know what to say, but they could have just held her hand, said nothing. It would have meant an awful lot. Job's friends did come, at least. But then we see that their silence of sympathy, which was so helpful, lengthened into a, well, maybe rather embarrassing silence of bankruptcy. Because their second aim had been to speak from the heart. And there they were, sort of shuffling. Say something. You say something. And then, in the end, after 7 days, Job is the one who says something. He says something which causes more embarrassment, although it shouldn't, for true friends, because Job, at this point, is painfully and brutally honest with himself, with his situation. And surely being honest is also part of friendship. Friends are the people we can be most honest with. And there are times in our lives when being honest is so difficult, facing up to things so hard. But we need to be painfully honest, and it really helps if our friends can be alongside us in such anguish and searching. It's no good being shallow when we're in deep trouble. And it's worth noting that Job is still being faithful to God in saying these things in chapter 3, which is one of the most difficult passages in the Bible to read because of the anguish in it. He is being honest about his feelings. And he expresses them in three ways. We turn to chapter 3. First, in verses 1 to 10, there's a carefully compiled curse. Secondly, in verses 11 to 19, there's a loud lament, asking why, why, why? And third, in verses 20 to 26, a final anguished question. And again, the book of Job is saying this is okay. Job has shown himself to be faithful in saying as disaster came upon him, the Lord gave and the Lord has taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord. And Job is also showing himself to be faithful in pouring out his heart in this further chapter, chapter 3. If we've had a series of big setbacks and the future looks bleak, God knows. God can take it. So, for a start, verses 1 to 10, Job's carefully compiled curse. Why careful? Well, careful because he does not curse God. He wouldn't turn against the one who made him and who sustains him still. That's what Satan said Job would do in an earlier chapter, but he doesn't. He's careful to curse instead the day of his birth. Let the day perish in which I was born, and the day of his conception, and the night that said a man-child is conceived. Now, they should be the happiest of days, birthdays. They should be happy birthday, but no. Verse 4 and following, let that day be darkness. And the night of his conception, he surmises, probably included a joyful cry as his parents made love. But verse 7, yes, let that night be barren. Let no joyful cry be heard in it. And following that, I wish the monster of the deep could upset the created order, so that things did not happen as they did. Those happy things have become such sad things that he cursed the days of his formation. And that's okay to say. God can take it. It's very strong. But he is feeling very strong feelings now. In his unutterable grief, he's finding ways to utter it, which are still careful and faithful. And thinking about not being born is much better than thinking about ending it all, which is all too often where people can be. So Job is being careful. Job knows the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. These things are given. Verse 20, the word given is there. He's being very careful. He's doing his best to avoid thoughts of taking his own life, because he knows that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. His thinking he doesn't want to get lodged there. And he does this partly by focusing first on his birthday instead. And I imagine him at this point going through his old birthday cards, crossing out the happy, ripping them up, saying this is not worth celebrating. And that's okay to make that expression. It is faithful. He's pasturing helpfully to himself in choosing that curse. Verses 1 to 10. Carefully chosen curse. And then the second section, verses 11 and following, here is loud lament. Actually, two laments probably. One that starts in verse 11, one that starts in verse 16. Same theme as what's gone before, different style now. So verse 11, why? Here he's showing his restlessness. Why? Why? Why did I not die at birth, come forth from the womb and expire? Why were there knees to receive me or breasts for me to suck? And so on. And the second lament in verse 16 and following, well, why was I not buried like a stillborn child, like an infant that never sees the light? He yearns to know why. He lurks because he yearns to be without troubles. And then he talks of sleep and being at rest, euphemisms for the end of life, wishing that he had been part of the infant mortality statistics instead of successfully born and raised. His restlessness, his lament, it's worth pointing out, is also a sign of hope. He is struggling with things. He is wrestling with things. That's a faithful thing to do. And Job cannot rest with things as they are. He yearns for a life unsullied by troubles. He is in pain, but more than that, he knows that things are wrong, terribly wrong. And he wants rest from this trouble. In the midst, this comes, the rest comes from going to the same place where the troublers and the wicked and the greedy and the taskmasters will go as well, the place of the dead. So here, his being a faithful person, his faith in God, adds to the trembling thoughts that he has. So his restlessness helps him, but his faith also adds to his trouble, because he is considering the future as a faithful person. And yet, although he is restless, Job is not resigned to his fate. He does at least have some hope. His very unrest is a thing of hope, which shows he's not given up. Might not seem a big thing, but when we are in pitch darkness, a small candle is a big light. And here, Job is showing that he has not given up. This restlessness is a faithful, helpful thing. And then the third section and last section is Job's anguished cry, verses 20 to the end. And in the middle of this, we see that he is feeling trapped. Any person whose circumstances are constrained, maybe very constrained, may know the feelings expressed in verse 23. Why is light given to one who cannot see the way, whom God has fenced in? Like an older person who is now unable to see. What's the point of light? Or a person who has become so confined that they don't come out of the one room now, when they used to know so much freedom in their life. What's the point of light outside? Why is light given to them? Good question. And in this section from 11 onwards, all of these whys are good questions. Fair questions for somebody in such depths. And in these themes of light and darkness, life and death, the big themes, the ones that matter, we see Job anticipating Jesus and how he addresses these things. Jesus knew such anguish in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus' suffering and death was a time of such great loneliness, such as Job is showing here. Jesus' suffering and death was accompanied by a supernatural darkness when he was on the cross. Everything seemed to be so bleak. Everything seemed to be pointing to the end of hope. And yet, that time with Jesus was the very time which was the beginning of hope. Because Jesus' suffering and death on the cross was not the end, but merely the way towards his resurrection from the dead, which is the future hope which gives meaning to our suffering and to the suffering of so many. So Job asks, why? Because he's clinging to the possibility of meaning and hope, which in Jesus has become a promised reality. Even in such darkness, Job has learnt he cannot avoid God. He's much better to recognize God is God and to be honest, faithfully, brutally honest, about his situation. And I hope this helps us as we cry out in prayer and seek the help of others in prayer ministry this morning.